Trathan Heckman and his nonprofit Daily Acts have cracked the code for inspiring communities in California to become more healthy, connected, equitable, and climate resilient. Among many topics during our conversation, the unique heart-centered approach of Daily Acts stood out. And Trathan himself, who models the power and possibilities of value-based leadership. Daily Acts fully embodies the old aphorism, think globally, act locally. And now I give you Trathan Heckman. Trathan Heckman, welcome to the Nonprofiteers Podcast.
Great to be here, Chip.
Oh, thank you for joining us. I can't wait to talk about Daily Acts. It's an amazing organization, and you've built a really, what I think is a kind of a unique approach to your work. So why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about your personal history and how that led to the founding of Daily Acts.
When I was in college about 30 years ago, bit more than that. You know, I was gradually becoming more and more aware of what even then felt like a bit of an overwhelming kind of state of our environment and socially for our people all over the planet. And the issues just seemed so massive even then. And so rather than kind of being overwhelmed by it or just kind of closing off to it and pretending it's not there, you know, putting your head in the sand, so to speak, I started to look for, like, okay, well, are there positive things happening? Are there solutions? And I just started to come across these kind of mind-blowing and heart-opening people and reference points. And it was herbalists and organic and regenerative farmers who were regenerating forests and farms and, you know, going down to Belize and being exposed to this culture that still felt intact and connected to the land in everyday life. And then I stepped into this amazing permaculture garden in Northern California, not too far from where I live, after about 5 or 6 years of this unconscious pathfinding from one positive breadcrumb to the next and just following what resonated and going like, and through all of these is, again, sort of being exposed to transformed people and transformed places and coming across these folks who were aware of the challenges we faced, but rather than being overwhelmed by it or closing off to it, they were connected to passion and purpose. And I didn't even know what purpose was or meant back then, but it was just like, what in the hell is in her, his Wheaties? And how can I get some of that? Gradually meeting these reference points, which hugely influenced me and eventually the founding of Daily Acts. Then I stepped into this garden, this permaculture garden, and I walked this gate and it was billions of years of nature's wisdom in a landscape, you know, this common backyard. Mm. And then I went to this conference called Bioneers that I've been involved with for over 20 years and got exposed to thousands of these change makers. And so this kind of series of exposures and breadcrumbs along the way just showed me that more and different was possible and that we could live these rich, purposeful, passionate lives while affecting amazing change.
It's so easy to be overwhelmed these days, and it's so easy to just throw up your hands, and climate issues are the perfect arena to just say, there's nothing I can do.
But it's so true.
I was reminded as you were talking about Pema Chodron's admonition to just start somewhere.
Yeah. So many amazing spiritual leaders, business leaders talk about that, being able to start small. And I think it's a common path. Like, you know, some of our most powerful neurochemical drivers, our intrinsic motivators, are being curious and then falling into learning, and then having learning lead to passion, and having passion lead to a greater sense of contribution or purpose. And along the way, finding things you could get good at, a sense of mastery, and we could have a sense of autonomy. And for me, getting exposed to issues while working for a big corporation after college, and then following my passion for snowboarding, as that was all getting started, I was a somewhat professional snowboarder for a while and doing big air stuff and having an amazing time just being in nature. And then the passion led to the greater connection and finding more purpose. Yeah. And so that was certainly kind of my path. And I think it's a really common and true path for folks.
Yeah, it's so important to get exposed to people doing great work, you know, to have mentors, to have people who you can learn from and inspire you. So let's go from that to the founding of Daily Acts and the mission and vision of Daily Acts.
Yeah. So getting exposed to all these reference points just definitely sparked inspiration, and those powerful positive emotions can really reset a lot of negative emotions and pull you towards something that's good. And so getting exposed to permaculture and ecology and justice and, you know, these amazing farmers and leaders, and then stepping into that garden and in that moment of, you know, stepping into billions of years of nature's wisdom in someone's backyard gave me this idea that we can change the world in a garden. And so all those reference points came together and eventually founding Daily Acts around an idea that you touched on of the power of our daily actions. You know, like Stephen Covey, the author, talks about have a big circle of concern and focus on your circle of influence, or the Gandhian be the change. Like it's said again and again in different ways. And so this idea that by reclaiming the power of our daily actions, we could transform ourselves and our homes and our gardens, and we could work with our neighbors and local groups, and then work with our communities and affect bigger and bigger transformation. That Margaret Mead quote always stuck of never doubt the ability of a small group of thoughtful, engaged citizens to change the world. Indeed, that's all it's ever been. So I took those core reference points and founded Daily Acts, you know, with this larger vision of having a more healthy and just and reverent human culture while doing this radical regeneration, you know, ecology, permaculture, those sort of things, and starting at that simple level in a garden. And so we started with educational tours, and then that led to from inspiration to then education to then application of teaching people how to do gray water and rainwater catchment and things that build local self-reliance and growing food. And then that led to from inspiration to education, application to transformation, to transforming one landscape and then more, and then, you know, kind of building coalitions and policy and all kinds of other bigger things. So we have this broader vision of find where your heart's inspiration meets the hurt you're called to heal. Our core message is about the power of small actions and the power of small groups and affecting personal and community transformation. And then our mission of inspiring transformative action that creates connected, equitable, climate resilient communities. How that plays out is in education programs and in landscape transformations, in coalition building and working on local and up to state level climate and water policy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I was thinking, you know, the old bumper sticker, which is very true. Think globally, act locally.
Yeah.
And the other thing I like about your philosophy that, you know, I've discerned from talking with you and also from reading some of your stuff on the website is, and I'm looking forward to reading Take Heart, Take Action, by the way. When did that come out?
In fall of 22.
Yeah.
So not that long ago.
Yeah. Really looking forward to reading that. But, you know, that idea that, you know, consistency and small acts trump intensity, and oddly, and I think I use this analogy with another podcast later, the Moneyball metaphor of, you know, it's better to just get people to have a team that is consistent and gets people on base than to spend a lot of time, you know, than trying to hit home runs all the time. You know, little acts consistently done with a compassionate purpose go a long way and over time make a big difference.
Well, at an intrinsic level, I think they resonate just so powerfully. But then they do add up through time, like building that consistency, just like in your personal life or in leadership of daily habits and practices at the personal scale, at the team scale, at the organizational scale, at the community scale, working on change through time. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. And we've been fortunate enough to be able to, over 23 years, produce a lot of mind-blowing examples of how small can scale. And so... Yeah. I always believed in it, but it's also nice to kind of have some data and some evidence that like, wow, that really works.
What's an example of that comes to mind?
We went from doing, say, a garden tour to installing our first public food forest in 2009, 14 years ago, It's the first one, at least in Northern California, probably wider. And this is not just a garden, but an ecological landscape that grows food, medicine, habitat, sequesters carbon, recharges rainwater, does a myriad of benefits. We did this in partnership with the city of Petaluma. It's a public garden. And so these landscapes have huge benefit. Then we did a bigger landscape and we worked with two organizations and in a single day, mostly transformed the Petaluma City Hall with about 250 volunteers. And that saved the city tens of thousands of dollars and 1 million gallons of water a year. And then we got the idea of, because everything's getting bigger, the problems. And so to call attention to the climate crisis, like, well, what if we planted 350 gardens in a weekend? And it scared the hell out of us to even think about it. And so a coalition of us got together, and within 17 weeks from the first idea, that over 40 schools, churches, businesses, organizations came together, and the community rose to the challenge. And in Sonoma County, California, over 600 gardens were planted and revitalized in a single weekend. And then that's over incredible. A decade, then we kept on doubling and doubling locally. We spread this to other communities. Over 100,000 actions and projects to grow food, save water, save resources, build community, build resilience were registered. And so kind of from a small thing to a little bigger with more people and more fun and more action, to bigger, 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 mm-hmm. the power of small actions in it, small groups when you work together and think and dream bigger.
Yeah, I love the fact that your work, let me read you a quote that I love from your website. "We believe in the power of our daily actions to reconnect people to self, community, and place, which helps to heal our society and planet." That's such a beautiful mission statement because it connects so many things. I love the fact that you guys are not just doing climate resilience. You've got a leadership training program. You touch on a lot of important virtuous vectors that we need, like equity and social justice. So can you talk a little bit about that and how that stuff is connected, and also about your value-based, what you describe as a heart-centered approach?
Sure. I love that phrase of virtuous vectors. That's great. And so in the Daily Acts four core values, which form the four sections of our book, Take Heart, Take Action, are reverence, ripples, relationship, and resilience. And their values, their operating principles, there's layers to them. Again, each of those is listed out in a lot of ways in the book, but it's about starting with your heart. I was just looking at an infographic from the HeartMath Institute, which I know you've been a longtime meditator, and they show the profound and science-backed data and cases of how powerful heart is, more so than your brain, at impacting other people, to be able to be strategic and effective and healthy and so many things. And so for us, we start with our heart, and that's, you know, looking at the intersection of where your heart's inspiration meets the hurt you're called to heal, and, you know, leaning into your larger purpose and service. And so once you, you know, have the inspiration and the heartbreak, then that leads to action. And action is about finding your voice to inspire and empower other people to find their voice. It's about practical action. And it's about honing your compass. It's difficult to navigate life as people, as fathers and daughters and sons and all of that, as organizational leaders. And so constantly working on your compass in an upside down world is important. And then that goes from heart to action to relationships, which our planet is based on relationships. That's what ecology is. And so from our relationships with life and each other to regenerating nature outside our door to affecting bigger change, and this process of constantly taking heart every day of the week, you know, leadership challenge, whatever it is, taking heart, taking action, trying to do so in right relation, and that builds resilience. And so that's how the four R's fit together from the values base. And so you asked two questions, though. That was one of them. What was the second one?
So I think you really answered both of them. That I was really asking you about your value-based approach and how you manage to connect. And to me, it's kind of obvious, but it's not obvious to a lot of people in the world that all these things are connected, because we're in relationship to everyone and the planet and nature. Whether we want to be it or not, we're in relation to that. And apologies for using an overused term, but it's organic.
Yeah.
It's organic to be in relationship, but we as human beings have the capacity to lose sight of our mental capacity creates issues as well. We have the unfortunate predilection to lose that insight, to alienate ourselves from nature and from each other. It's a very powerful thing you've done because you've connected all of these virtue vectors, equity, social justice, climate resilience, ecological concerns, but it hasn't diluted your mission or the action that you're taking.
Yeah. Well, in the change the world in a garden approach, whether you garden or not, even though a lot of people garden, in a garden, you can understand how nature functions, and it's about relationships and connectivity and, you know, all the parts of their functioning together. The plants and the critters and the habitat and the building, the soil and the mycelial networks underground and the, you know, built structures and how water moves through the landscape and all those sort of things. And so seeing things in a more of an ecosystemic and relational way, it's really important when working on issues to be cross department or in a community. You know, it's amazing often the barriers between two city agencies or two county agencies, especially in crisis response. We've been involved in a lot of that because we've had historic floods and droughts and fires. We've often been like this switchboard operator connecting the dots between different, much bigger departments and agencies because we take this holistic approach and we partner really widely because of that. We partner with 80 to 100 organizations and agencies a year. But the strength is a challenge too, because when you take a cross-sector multi-benefit approach, you can make the case to do anything and everything. And we often have, but also knowing when to not just the plant to a ridiculous degree strategy, but the prune and select strategy of where you need to focus in, where you need to say no, all those sort of things. Yeah. Wouldn't trade it for anything, but that's an important skill to develop as well. Your pruning and your discerning selection.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not unlike a garden itself. By the way, I'm a big gardener. We have lots of gardens around
our
house. Yeah. And I'm also, I don't use chemicals, but I'd be in trouble with you if you saw my landscape, because sadly, I cannot abandon my affection for my lawn.
Deep in our DNA.
Yeah, it is. It's it goes way back. But, you know, my son has described that is the bougie element of the landscape. So I'm not going to let him and you get together because
lawns have a purpose. But also, if you've ever seen like a native bunch grass lawn with these long grass lawns, they're mind-blowingly beautiful. And so, so grasses and lawns, you know, grasses have their place. If you do have a lawn, like I go up to Seattle periodically and see friends, and in Seattle, the lawn is green when it's raining and it's brown when it's not, which is a more, you know, healthy approach to a lawn to me. Let it live with the seasons.
Absolutely. And, you know, there have been years when my entire lawn browns out and it's amazing. It always comes back.
And you let it grow and then it can produce seeds that then is beneficial to insects and things. And so, you know, keeping it in the natural cycles, there's a place for lawns.
It's
rid of a lot of lawns.
I know. The other thing about lawns are they're the highest maintenance, you know, grass is the highest, that kind of grass is the highest maintenance plant in the landscape. Nothing else needs as much attention
as lawn grass. Lawnmower smog, chemicals, not creating benefit or critters. If you're not letting it go to seed and all those sort of things, it creates a lot of problems. And systemically, you know, it's a really large crop across the U.S. if you added up all the lawns. Reworking our relationship with that to do it in a more sustainable way is work.
So, like I said, I'm really going to make sure you never meet my son, because two of you will gang up on me.
It'd be good.
So let's talk a little bit about the things that you bring to bear in your work as a leader, you know, management principles, your philosophy. And I know when we talked earlier, you said you were terrified of that question because you could talk for hours. That doesn't terrify me, actually. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what are the important principles that motivate you and also that help Daily Acts do the work it does?
Yeah. And I actually love that question, but limiting myself is a challenge on it.
That's okay.
I think I already mentioned kind of at the philosophical level, the be the change, the sort of ecology-based, heart-centered, our four R's, reverence, ripples, relationships, resilience, that covers a ton of ground. The same with the following your inspiration. So those are at the philosophical level, and there's a bunch more. I'm a big believer in reference points. Every day I think about and call out my reference points, and I have notes, documents of my ecological and spiritual and leadership reference points. And surrounding yourself with who and what resonates with you, even if you're just calling out their name in the morning meditation, is really powerful. And then, you know, practically speaking, those values, from values to operating principles, like I mentioned, a lot of sort of habits focus, like personal leadership development for yourself, for your teams, for your organization, in your community. We have a lot of practices. We integrate organizationally. We do this, a practice called personal ecology, to try and help people be their best so they could be healthier, happier humans who process their stuff better, and they could work better in teams, and they could give more to the mission. So we do things like team meditations and check-ins and quarterly retreats. We do a lot to sort of recenter, you know, because there's a lot of complications in life and leadership. And so we're big on, here's your annual plan, and everybody's got all their personal goals and department goals, and frequent recentering. Are they still tracking? Do we need to pivot? Things like that. I'd mentioned Stephen Covey before. You know, I really love, I've always stuck with, after his first book, Seven Habits, which is a habit book, which is about finding your voice to help others find their voice.
Yep.
And then he kind of laid out, I tweaked the language to fit for sort of my memory and needs, but these four components of modeling, pathfinding, aligning, and unleashing. Day-to-day modeling of, like, how do we live our life? How do we stay true to our mission, our purpose? How do we show up as a good friend, father, mother, leader? And then from the personal modeling, when you're at the team scale, at the organizational scale, we're having conversations with our city and agency partners today about big grants we're going after. The pathfinding, the shared pathfinding. I do it every day with different parts of our team. How do we figure out what's on track? How do we problem solve? All those sort of things. And so the personal modeling to the shared modeling, which is pathfinding, to aligning. Are we clear on our goals and our focus? And then once you have modeling, shared pathfinding, alignment on your goals, then you could have autonomy and agency and unleashing the power of people just to do good things. So those, you know, those from the Stephen Covey realm, I go through these every day as a part of my meditation pretty quickly, of these different operating principles. So I have a bunches of them. The work of Jim Collins and work of Forces for Good is a phenomenal nonprofit book where the authors took the methodology of Jim Collins and applied it to the nonprofit world. And they studied, they looked at like 400 nonprofits and studied dozens of them and came down with these six specific operating principles that, you know, groups who were affecting community scale, game-changing change applied, whether they were politically left, right, run like a green NBA or very artistic and looser. It actually didn't matter. They came down to the set of operating principles. So the Forces for Good work I use and work on. And I think sort of like with habits, the most important habit is the habit of refining your habits and developing new habits. Like, to me, the most important leadership principle is constantly looking at and learning from, like, what are the elements of the compass that are helping you make good choices? And so that, you know, at a leadership, and I mentioned kind of from the operational perspective of, you know, another thing that came from Covey, I think, or Collins or Drucker or one of them, was around this simple thing of, like, there's two things, it's focus and execution. And the focus is about the modeling and the shared pathfinding, and the execution is about the aligning and the unleashing to a degree. And so, you know, we're constantly recentering kind of in departments, in our team, in our organization, to like, where are we trying to go and how do we land the plane by the end of the year, and the budget goals and the impact goals and all that, especially when you have a lot of partners and a lot of complicated moving parts. You know, recentering is important. And we do that in our coalition work and our work with our agency partners, that process of like, are we rowing in the same direction? Are people clear on what their part is? Are they clear on where we're trying to go? I know there've been studies that show there's a real lack of all those things in a lot of corporations and organizations. It's easy to be off track. and somehow still stay in business. From a Compass level, there's a lot of systems and tools we use to do it. And fundraising, just to hit all the buckets you touched on briefly, you know, nurture the hell out of your relations, raise money from the heart. That's a little different in the bigger government contracts and grants and things, but like relational respect and value. And government gets a lot of heat. Even our local partners, they get beat on so hard. And I'm like, our government is doing such a good job. We have partners who are doing amazing things. We've been able to work with them. But, you know, I think just the whole, that quote of be kind for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. A little more compassion, focus and advocacy in those things. Yes.
So when you said our government is doing a great job, you're talking about our local, your local government, right? Yeah. I think we can make that claim about the federal government.
Nationally,
at this point.
It's a little, but even nationally, like our congressman who I know personally, like he's in a, oh my God, we're on a call with him a few weeks ago, and being a representative in that system in that house, like,
can you imagine a more frustrating, challenging?
I cannot, but they are doing so much good. The resources they're doing to take care of people and regenerate our watersheds and our community. There's still a lot of good that's happening. So,
well, the good people that are in that, you know, it's remarkable that they're still there. You know,
oh my
the people that are truly service oriented in that environment, which is hyper political, and I mean that in the worst way.
It's
incredible. But one of the things you said was, I think, really intriguing. There were a couple of things. One is and human beings in general should do this, nonprofit leaders particularly, the idea of reminding yourself on a daily basis of the things that matter to you. And, you know, you can call it a gratitude journal, you can call it references, you can call it principles, you know, it doesn't matter, but just taking some intentional time to recognize those things that really matter to you. And the other thing that occurred to me is that, you know, as a longtime student of official and unofficial student of comparative religion, I'm delving into things constantly. And I read this thing by Richard Shankman recently, and it was about the idea, the simplest idea of Buddhism is, you know, clean up your act, cultivate virtue, be good, concentrate, and then use your concentrate to see the nature of reality. I thought that was, you know, 3 points: clean up your act, concentrate, and then use your concentration for good. I thought that was fantastic. And that's, you know, that's kind of built into your first two, that clean up your act part is built into your first two principles, which is modeling and alignment. And alignment is where so many, as you said, so many nonprofits get off base. It's the response, non-alignment is responsible for mission creep and all kinds of other debilitating outcomes. You know,
and those simple reminders, you know, and they're also closely tied to our first two values of take heart, take action, you know?
So what have been the challenges for you in the evolution of Daily Acts?
There's definitely, you know, the importance of being connected to your passion and your purpose and having good people around you, because there's a lot of challenges just with folks making it through the day and having families and kids and navigating crises and all that. Running organizations for 20 plus years, always trying to figure out how to keep the lights on and keep people employed. And so there's always been challenges, how to raise enough money to keep the team and keep growing it and keep improving benefits so people could afford to live in their community and take care of themselves and their family is a perennial nonprofit issue. Ironically, in crisis, there's the aliveness to crisis and people come together, and some of the toughest times, like, you're clear, you're lit, you're all in, people are collaborating in a different way. You're in a lot of difficulty, but those in some ways are the easier time. Sustaining an endless crisis is a really big challenge, which is why we do a lot of sort of mind-body medicine, self-care, personal ecology, because it's difficult to sustain in this work day after day, year after year, decade after decade, while constantly looking at really bad news. You know, so those are some of the ongoing challenges. I'll say leading in COVID was just brutal. If I look at the results we achieved and staying true to our values and all that, and figuring out how to pivot our financial model when events and fundraising went away and responding to crisis and the things we launched, I think were all really great. And we did a pretty good job of maintaining our culture when we're all online, but it was just really difficult. Hindsight, and figure out a way to maintain more personal connection because everybody had so much going on that impacted them personally, but that impacts teams and organizations. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, leading through COVID had a lot of layers to it. I would say, you know, I think this is true for leaders in general and certainly for like heart-centered and relationship-based, making difficult decisions when things aren't sustainable, programs, making difficult decisions about staffing when folks aren't a fit or the organization's no longer fit for them, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Jim Collins, get the right people on the bus. I've talked to a lot of other more experienced leaders through time of like, you usually know pretty quickly if things are going to work out or not. And then you take forever getting to that point. So making just difficult leadership choices that don't always feel good is a big one. And I think this balance of being responsive and, you know, with a high emotional intelligence and tuned to the needs and the people around you and trusting your voice, especially in leadership, sometimes you just have to make decisions that people aren't going to be happy with. And for me as an empathetic relational person, that's extra hard of making those tough choices. And, you know, so mm-hmm. Those are plenty of challenges to chew on.
Those are good ones. I think in the private sector and nonprofit sector, management and leadership challenges are the toughest. And, you know, not to put a positive spin on what's intrinsically a difficult activity, letting go of someone, if you think in terms of compassion for that person and compassion for the organization, if someone's underperforming, they're affecting the team and they're affecting the mission of the organization. But here's the other thing. They're probably not in the right place. It's not good for them. You know,
that's what I've found kind of every time. We have not let go of a lot of people, very few mm-hmm. in our whole history. Mm-hmm. They've then moved on to the thing that was the better role fit. And so as you could often feel bad, I think it's often a sign that there's something that's not a good fit for the person in the organization.
Yeah. What would you highlight as the biggest successes that you guys have had since your founding?
You know, I feel blessed that we've honestly had so many successes of the scaling of the gardens that I talked about from 600 to tens of thousands of actions and projects. We've been really successful. We've helped launch and lead over 24 different community coalitions that have been in fire response and flood response and all sorts of things. We've done a lot of great things in emergency response. Over the last 4 years, one of the latest crisis response, we played a leadership role in founding a coalition called Climate Action Petaluma, which then got our city to be the first city in our county to declare climate emergency and to create a new climate commission, a new appointed body. And that led to a ripple effect to the other cities in the county, and where Sonoma County became the first county in the U.S. to have all jurisdictions declare climate emergency. And that led to setting bold, equitable 2030 climate targets. It led to our city becoming the first city in the world that banned all gas stations. It's amazing. All these different initiatives and efforts launched, things that are beyond us. But that has been like the biggest systemic success. And then just the number of people's lives that have been transformed through being involved in programs. I can't tell you the number of times people turned their water and chemical intensive front yard lawn into this beautiful ecological landscape. And then they met more neighbors in 3 months since doing the landscape transformation than 3 decades of living in their neighborhood. The number of times we've heard those stories of significant impacts of people, like what you said, the reconnect to and regenerate self, nature, and community. When those things come together in a simple front yard or something. So there's been all these bigger changes we've been able to affect with gardens and policy, but then at this personal human scale of mm-hmm. how people's hearts have been opened and lives have been changed by being engaged, 23 years of that is, I feel super blessed to be.
Yeah, you, You just described the embodiment of good karma.
I like that.
Yeah.
The succinct
version. Yeah. That's fantastic. So what are the three biggest mistakes you've made that you learned from?
I believe in mistakes. Learning and doing things differently, like I mentioned, leading in COVID, I think we all did the best we could in that. And we did amazingly well from keeping the organization in business and affecting a lot of positive change. There are a number of things, some of which I mentioned, that I would do differently from leading in COVID. So that's like a big multi-layered bucket. Well, shortly before COVID, I'm like, wow, 20 years of Daily Acts and growing, increasing impact. And I think January of like 2020 or whatever, and I'm like, I think I got this leading figured out. And then I just got hammered for about 2 years after that. Lots of good learning. You know, the sort of the making difficult leadership choices is an ongoing learning. So I do differently if I could. I'm still working on doing that right or better. But if I could come back and change that part of my gene, that would just rip the Band-Aid off some things compassionately, but a little more quickly. That's something I would do. So those are two. I think, you know, I haven't even ever thought of it this way until now. It's been sort of easy in a way of like, I have an amazing family and a wife and daughter and time for garden community. Historically, over 20 years of kind of being all in on leadership and 7 days a week, I've done a pretty good job of taking care of myself and my family and loved ones. And that said, I have a different level of focus now on continuing to lead and grow our work and increase our impact while not sacrificing self and family and time in nature and doing things that just for the pure love, like snowboarding is my favorite thing to do on the planet. I would probably try and hold a harder line if I looked back on claim more for myself and life balance, like be more clear and focused on the outcomes we were trying to reach and what we needed to do to get there. So not give up the mission of Daily Acts and things we do, but like claim even more space for self and life while fulfilling that mission.
Yeah, of course. And to remove so when I say mistake, you know, another way of thinking about that is imperfection or results in an experiment you ran that didn't, you know, work out perfectly, or just a pocket of, you know, ignorance. And I don't mean that in a negative way either, but you know, the thing about the work-life balance thing is that's something that's, if you're passionate about your work, it's until you go through that and see some of the things that you've been missing, right? And some of the ways that you structured things. One of the things my company does is help people find work-life balance. It's hard to see sometimes. And classically, I think it's something that good leaders just learn over time. It's not something that's immediately obvious because you're doing something that you're passionate about. Yeah. So it doesn't feel like you're missing anything. But over time, you realize, you know, maybe I have missed out on some things.
Yeah.
So if you were going to give three pieces of advice to a nonprofit leader in any sector, what would you tell them? What are the things you've learned, the three most important things you've learned that you'd like to pass on to other nonprofit leaders?
I mean, my caveat would be more nuanced depending on scale. Like I've spent a lot of time with really small, locally, regionally, statewide, nationally, internationally in different movements, small grassroots groups, some totally volunteer based, mostly under $200K budget or something. And so depending on like if it's someone leading $1 million organization, a many million dollar organization, smaller, it'd be tailored. But the compass, the point, and these are points I've already kind of touched on of investing. I've never regretted. I've only ever wanted to invest more in self-development, honing your compass, those sort of things. And so the that deeper personal work, your mind, your body, your spirit, the compass that guides you, and then that and with your team for the shared pathfinding, to do that personal pathfinding and then the shared pathfinding. And, you know, similar but related, developing self and team, you know, investing mm-hmm. more. It's difficult to balance the financial needs and all the priorities, but, you know, finding ways to help your team develop themselves as humans, not just professional development, the personal development, which will make them better mm-hmm. workers, honestly. They're going to be more effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
At handling their emotions and their stuff. A real issue I've seen through time, it's getting better, but so many people and organizations are very focused on themselves, like staying in business. They may focus on their field. I focus on youth development. Why would I care about climate? And so getting outside of the box of your organization or your field. And so this is about the balance at multiple scales of self-interest and shared interest. Like, mm-hmm. how do you stay focused mm-hmm. on your mission and keep your lights on while play a larger role and support other groups and players? So I think that, you know, I mentioned the finding your mentors and support of, in my position, having other executive directors to connect with, Bioneers Conference, I mentioned your reference points, your spiritual leaders, the stuff you read and write, and just surround yourself with, you know, the things that help you grow whole and operate at your best. And then the last one is really just that reminder to, you know, find the mentors, the support, the reference points you need to live and give your best. For me, it's other executive directors who are in my position. It's the Bioneers Network that I mentioned, things I read, reference points, you know, so just really spend more time on surrounding yourself in all forms with who and what lights you up.
I love that. So invest in self and team, find the balance between self-interest and shared interest, and get inspiration and ideas and motivation from peers and other people that are doing good work.
That's a good snapshot.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. What's the best way for people to plug in? I know you've got a great website and there are lots of things that people can see and do. The one thing about your website, I'll say, is a quick plug for it. The resources there are fantastic. It's not just a vehicle for fundraising. It's, you know, you've got nice. Some really interesting stuff there that communities can use and people doing good work can use.
Yeah, there's dailyacts.org. There's a ton of resources. You can see local things we're doing to transform local school landscapes and parks and things like that. There's also a lot of resources on how you could do this yourself. As you mentioned, if people want to get a copy of our book, you could get the book on Amazon. On our website, they're sustainably printed. We ordered a whole separate load. So if you get it straight from us, they're printed in a better way. And then if you're interested in donating or being further involved on that front and supporting our work, you could go to our website. You could reach out to me. And through time, you know, there's three parts of the work we're doing of it's the landscape work, which is at the local, regional, and some state scale. And there's a group called Land Resilience Partnership that we're a part of that is starting out in California, but is creating resources for farther and wider through time. And then we're doing different parts of policy work. And so we have some of that on our website, examples like some of the work we've done with our city. But we're going to be putting more resources through time. And then the third bucket is just amplifying the message and the models with the existing resources we have, with the book, with interviews like this. And we'll be creating more resources that can help, whether it's individuals or organizations or communities, kind of engage in and do this work and apply it in their communities.
Great. Well, on the podcast page, I'll certainly put some links, valuable links to what you guys are doing. And again, thank you so much for joining me. When I finally wise up and decide to replace my lawn, I'm going to give you a call.
I will look forward to that call from you or your son. And really nice to connect with Chip. I appreciate that you're doing this work and spreading these sort of messages in the world for folks to get inspired and engaged.
Well, you're doing the hard work.
We all have our part, right? That's the important thing.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Trathan. Well, let's keep in touch and take care.
Awesome. I love it. You as well, Chip.
Okay. Bye.
Take care.